Hey, this is LOA Today, the Law of Attraction show. Welcome to LOA Today. Walt Thiessen and Joel Elston here. It is Thursday, March the 2nd, 2017. This week we continue our discussion of Think and Grow Rich by Napoleon Hill. And last week we spent time on Chapter 12, The Subconscious Mind. And we realized, Joel, that even though it's not that long of a chapter, there's a lot to this topic. And we just couldn't let it go. We had to do it for another show.
And I'm really glad we're focusing on this, because while I do think all the book has relevance and this is a particular topic that I think now, so much more than when the book was originally written, it is very relevant to the law of attraction. Hill was very wise to be able to see this way back in the day when he wrote it. It is right now so clear to me, at least in my personal life. The subconscious mind is where all of this takes place.
It is, and it's not just for the law of attraction. I would say the subconscious mind is becoming a very key cornerstone of all of human life right now. In New Age circles, they talk about it in terms of a spiritual awakening and so forth. In religious circles, it's for some it's end days, for others it's new possibilities. But I mean, virtually any camp that you look at, you're finding people being aware of more going on, more in their lives, more of a spiritual side, more hope for you know what their goals are in life and so forth, more expectation, and all of that is centered in the subconscious mind.
Yes, and that is so. That for our audience, as we were touching on last week, and we're going to continue today. The cornerstone, as they learn, as we learn together, that it applies way within the law of attraction, but it so much takes place there that redundant patterns of behavior are taking place in the subconscious mind. Your subconscious controls illogical thoughts that you don't understand why, and it gets programmed. The programming of the subconscious mind is really through a bunch of different mechanisms that, until you learn how to control that, you're programmed unintentionally from birth. And we you know, I always talk about my news blackout and not watching the news. And when I understood that I was being programmed by the media.
Yes.
And that was a key to me. It just really, I said, I don't want them to be in charge of my programming. They were dictating the narrative that I was hearing, and my subconscious mind was picking up on that. It's very, very real.
There's a theme that applies to a large chunk of the population, particularly here in the United States, although it's also worldwide. The theme of the media programming us. And unfortunately, most people haven't caught on, like you and I have, to the idea that you should stop listening to the news because of that. Instead, they rail against the news. But nevertheless, the recognition is the same. They may not even recognize that it's happening, that their reaction is happening because of the impact that it has on their subconscious minds. But they recognize that it's happening. They feel it. And they're angry about it. And they aren't even sure why they're angry, other than they think that, well, the media is just treating them badly. But I mean, it's a major phenomenon going on today, so it's not surprising.
Yes.
At all.
Well, and I was given an analogy, and I really take this into heart, you know, now, and I may have mentioned this last show, but I want to expound on this today. That everything we see, everything that we hear, everything that we smell, our surroundings are being processed by our brain, and the interpretation of the brain is handled through the subconscious mind. And the idea that we're getting rid of stuff that we don't need to be wasting our energy on. One of the factors that if you were stuck in a world where you had to focus on everything that was around you, it would be almost maddening.
Yes.
You know, the mind has the ability to say, your conscious mind can say, I'm dismissing 90% of this, and I'm going to focus on the relevant piece. One of the things that I realize, especially now that I have my 11-year-old foster son with me, a child's eye hasn't seen as much as we have. So they're not discounting the things we're discounting. They're not filtering out the things that we're filtering out. So I'm always fascinated by what he sees when we go somewhere. We're obviously looking at the same thing, but what he tends to focus on is the stuff that I am automatically blocking out. Now, all of that is going into my subconscious mind. It's part of the programming. And how we can control that is learning to adjust what we're picking up on. This is where this all comes together, the ability, the frequency, the tuning in, or whatever term you want to use, but adjusting to what we're filtering for. And if you want to filter the world and see it horribly, then that's exactly what it is, and that's what exactly will continue to be. Or if you want to tend to focus on what the great stuff is, what's really positive, then that's what your world is there. And that's how the law of attraction is responding to the emotion of how we feel, your perspective, and that emotion is taking place by what your subconscious mind is allowing to come through.
And I think the subconscious mind is really, really important when it comes to understanding how and where that focus works. Because the subconscious mind absorbs everything that we're aware of with our senses, regardless of what our conscious mind wants us to be aware of. If it's happening, it's getting into our subconscious mind. So it becomes really, really critical for us to deliberately focus our conscious attention, because that's our defense. It's not like we can prevent the other stuff from coming in, but what we can do is we can replace it and overcome it with all the stuff we do want to focus on. That's why that focus is so critically important.
And Walt, one of the fascinating things that I have I've always wondered about is I have obviously my work with foster care goes back many years. Hmm. And one of the behaviors of many foster care children, and this is not remotely with my child that I have now, even though my son TJ showed a little bit of it early in him moving into my home, is this unique pattern of food hoarding. They've been neglected, so they will take food and hide it and store it as a sort of a defense mechanism about being hungry.
Right.
Well, and I think our entire audience, you go, well, that's, Joel, that's not rocket science to figure out where that takes place. However, one of the fascinating things that they're finding, they have found, and I've never understood why until my understanding how the subconscious mind works, there are kids that were neglected the first 6 or 7 months of their life that were placed in loving, caring homes. They have no conscious memory of being neglected or hungry, but they still do the food hoarding mentality.
Wow, yeah, that shows just how powerful the subconscious mind really is, because that's the only possible explanation.
Exactly. That explains where that comes on. And we have a very, now that we understand that, this is the exciting piece of this,
yep.
is this, our subconscious mind is aware from birth. It is aware. It picks up everything. It's there. The conscious mind took longer to develop. The subconscious mind is developed early. It's there. It's absorbed. It doesn't use words. It doesn't operate that way. It is obviously one of the most valuable tools we have. And so it makes sense that when we learn to control or attempt to control what we're programming into our subconscious mind, that's a big event. I have been studying, as you know, a lot of quantum thinking and epigenetics and a lot of different things. And one of the fascinating things that sort of blends this together, one of the podcasts I was listening to the other day was describing a brain system search that this doctor was doing. And what that means is he was able to use a bunch of electrodes on somebody's brain and identify, like if he hit the guy relatively hard with like it caused not deep pain, obviously, but a little pain, it showed up on the brain scan. And it's like, you could see that, wow. And he started identifying what part of the brain was feeling the pain of where he was hitting, which is fascinating. That alone is fascinating. But what took place was he had them watch a video of the sports bloopers where people are getting hit in the groin or hit in the head with baseballs and stuff like that. And the brain was still lighting up as it watched it as if it were being harmed itself.
Yeah. Yeah.
Now, that is, now he's not physically being harmed, but the subconscious mind cannot distinguish the difference between the two.
You know, one of the weirdest things from my perspective, it hasn't been a big issue lately, but I remember a good 30 to 40 years ago, there was a big brouhaha about violence on television. And yes. And the brouhaha was what the violence on television did to kids. It never once touched on the subject of what it does to adults. And I never really understood that.
Right. Right. There's a lot of political reasons. It's easier to make.
Oh, of course. Issues. Yes. Right. Yeah.
But at the same time, you're exactly right. That when you're watching, I used to love horror movies. I really did. I thought they were exciting, and I, in no way do I have any inclination to act out of that manner. It's clearly silly to me. Until I understood that my subconscious brain, it's witnessing that, it doesn't know the difference.
Mm.
My emotion toward it is not the same as it happening, but my subconscious brain isn't worried about that. That's what's being programmed back there. It's piece of it. Now, there's a whole bunch of brain function here, so that we're I'm not trying to claim any we're all damaged beyond belief because we watched Halloween or something. But I do believe that all of that wear and tear, especially when you combine it with the emotion of fear and loss and the redundancy of life where we have these same patterns, I think that becomes a very powerful programming message to the brain, to the subconscious mind. So when you believe that I am poor and I have money problems, I've always had money problems, no matter what happens, I have money problems. Well, that becomes your mantra, and that's why people who have poor people are always going to be poor until they quit believing they're poor. And it's not the lack of money causing the poorness or the lack of wealth, not poorness, I guess, but the lack of wealth is this subconscious belief that this is our destiny. Mm. This is waiting to be fulfilled.
Which is definitely what the law of attraction teaches us. You know, you mentioned horror films. Interesting you should bring that one up because it cued something in my mind. You said you used to be a fan of them before you realized what it was doing to yourself. I never really was a fan of them, but I have a story of what happened to me when I was in college. This was the late 70s, and a friend asked me to go see the movie Alien with him, Sigourney Weaver. Now, I had really no interest in seeing the movie, but I'll go with you, Dan, no problem. So Dan and I went to see the movie, and that's the one that has the scene where halfway through the movie, the alien, small alien being eats his way from inside out of the victim's stomach, and it's a very gory scene and so forth. Well, that scene comes along, and when I saw it, the special effects were terrible. I mean, I didn't believe for a second that it was real blood or that it was a real being, chewing its way out. So the entire theater is freaking out, and I am bowled over with laughter.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
And I didn't realize until just now, when you were describing what you described, that I was unintentionally putting up a defense mechanism against it. Because it was infecting my subconscious mind, and my immediate conscious reaction was to just laugh at the thing. And then my second conscious reaction was, and the best part was, my friend who dragged me there reached over, grabbed me by the arm and said, "We're leaving."
Wow.
But the other thing that my conscious mind did was, after I left, was I said, "I don't know why we came to this thing." And second of all, you've just reinforced me. I never want to see horror movies. They're just not interesting to me. And what I didn't realize is that it was being driven by my subconscious mind saying, "God, no, please, no more."
Well, that is, when we think about it, and all of this, as we start to develop and we start to live in the law of attraction in a productive way, we're all in the law of attraction's effects. But when we see how it's affected us and how the subconscious mind is the emotional, it leads to the emotional feelings that we are in tune with. And the intense emotion is attached to this. And one of the weird things that I can remember as a child was irrational fears. Now, they were still just as real to me, but I logically knew they were irrational. Mm-hmm. And I can remember laughing at those irrational fears.
Oh, you did?
But yeah, because I just knew there is no way Popeye is going to come hurt me.
He's cartoon. Right.
I know that. But yet I'm scared of it. It was just this odd dance that I did. But I remember as a kid laughing at how silly the thought was, and that even then I was sort of protecting against it.
Yeah.
One of the things that I was reading last week is one of the things that most people really don't understand when police officers who go to very traumatic crime scenes or suicide scenes, they often arrive in ungodly conditions,
yes.
You can imagine.
Oh, yes.
And a lot of times, in fact, most times, I've been on a couple of those years ago with a police officer. I wish I never would have went, but I was doing some social service work in South Carolina and saw stuff I hope I never see again. And when we walked in, it was a brutal scene. And my first reaction was the officers actually started joking.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And I was like, these are the most cold-hearted men I've ever seen.
Mm.
I guess they saw the look on my face, and the guy pulled me outside. He said, first of all, you don't need to be in here. And he said, we do this because there's two options for us, to figure out a way to cope with it, or we would have mental breakdowns.
Right.
And he said, we're not being disrespectful. And I understood it. I at that moment, that's his job.
Yeah.
He has to walk in there. He has to come up with something that is, if he could put some humor in between him and his subconscious mind and what he's seeing, I think that's a good tool. I see it so clearly now.
Oh, yeah. And it reinforces really what this chapter is all about. Because while the subconscious mind is constantly taking in everything that we experience, whether our conscious mind wants it to or not, the good news is that what our conscious mind focuses on is strong enough to overcome the effects of all that negativity. So
yes.
So when we focus on the stuff we want and not on the stuff we don't want, when we focus on the positives and take our minds off of the negatives deliberately so that our conscious mind at least is focusing on the good stuff, that, boy, this is so reassuring. That's enough to overcome the deleterious effects of all the negative stuff that the subconscious mind has to endure. That's very, very encouraging for me.
And I love the fact so much attention is being spent on the subconscious mind right now and its role in not just the law of attraction, as you said, in other areas,
yeah.
In behavioral issues. And, you know, I found this story in California, if I remember correctly. And this family has a very rare blood type, and I forget which one it was, and the entire family had it, and they had a DNA predisposition to a certain type of cancer, and everybody was getting a cancer by the time, this unusual cancer, by the time they were 35. Fortunately, it was very curable, but it was just very rare, so and if you got it early, it was very curable, so they were testing everybody from the moment they happened. So there were four sons, and all four were getting tested. And when the youngest one came along, he went and got tested, and all of them were showing signs for the marker of the disease or the cancer. However, the other son had a different blood type. And they were trying to figure out what happened. Finally, after a lot of inquiries, the wife admitted she had had an affair, and the dad was a carrier of this gene, and the child was not his biological son and did not carry the harm gene, but yet he was showing markers for the cancer.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yep.
And 6 months later, after all that was revealed, they just wanted to check up on him, said that maybe it was an error. There was no signs of the cancer. And the point is, the subconscious mind will grasp onto things, and it will make them real. And it can make you being poor real. It can make you being unlovable real. It can make you be all these things, or it can do the exact opposite. It doesn't have an emotion attached to it. It just goes by what you're feeding it.
And that means that what we're really doing here on this earth is we're learning how to control our conscious minds.
Yes.
Because when we learn how to do that, everything falls into place. And right. and the great news is that not only is the conscious mind more powerful than the subconscious mind when it is focused deliberately, but it's more powerful than DNA.
Well, that's insane. Well, and that is the entire study of epigenetics. Outside of genetics, outside of DNA, that's where the new studies are. It is that DNA was always thought to be locked in. It's not anymore. They're looking at it differently. It's pliable in a way they never thought, based on your beliefs, based on where you're at, based on environment. And that's really incredible. You have had there's multiple cases, and I love my foster care stories that turn out really good. There was a young man when he was one year old in Alabama. He was adopted by a wealthy family. Clearly, one didn't remember the adoption. He has an entire family of no one had ever graduated high school. No one had an IQ of above 79, I think, or 80, relatively.
Wow.
And none of that. But he was adopted when he was one. He adapted to the family. He graduated high school with honors. He never knew. He just was doing what that family did.
Right.
They expected him to behave a certain way and live a certain way and learn a certain way, and he did that. We've talked often about this study has been replicated multiple times. The first one was done in California about the third grade child that they went in and they convinced the entire third grade teaching team that they were about to get the highest IQ child that had ever been in the school. And that the problem is this kid had been performing very average. So what that meant is their instruction was lacking because the highest IQ child to ever ever test in the county was coming in. This was not a high IQ. This was a very average IQ boy. However, the teachers expected him to be this very smart child. His grades went up. His IQ level test in 1 year went up 32 points,
wow,
which is not possible. It was expected of him.
Right.
And he bought into it. And when it was revealed, it obviously, and this study has been repeated multiple times.
Oh, yeah.
With very similar results. But it's what we expect. It really becomes about, and it isn't just us. When we convince others of a certain thing, the book "We Are the Placebo" by Dr. Joe DiPenza is an incredible book talking about just this: the idea that our subconscious mind is really is this master. It is the master of our ship, and while we can't directly, by definition, control the subconscious mind, we are in charge of the programming. That is very exciting to me.
It is exciting. And in fact, it resonates in a lot of different ways in my mind. You talked about that study being replicated. Of course, not only has it been replicated, it's also been performed in a number of different ways. I remember one study from, I think, the early 1960s, where there were, I think it was three classes, all the same grade level, and three different teachers. And one teacher was given the smarter students, one teacher was given the students who didn't perform very well, and the third one was given the average students. And by the end of the year, that's the way they tested out. And of course, in the beginning of the year, they hadn't actually separated the students in that way at all. They were just all kind of mixed together. So once again, you know, reconfirming the same observation that whatever the expectations are is what they live up to or down to. I mean, there's an early example, and there are a lot of them like that, of how our minds are able to control what happens. What I particularly like is some of the stuff that's happening in, say, the last 20 years. You've mentioned a few of them, epigenetics and biology of belief and all that kind of thing. But I just love the fact that over the last 20 years, psychology opened up a brand new branch that did not exist before, that they're now calling positive psychology. And yes. I was talking about that with my wife very recently, and observing that when I was in college, I took Introduction to Psychology. As you know, I was trying things out, as most people do, and I couldn't even stay in the course. I did actually finish the semester, but it was a two-semester course that I didn't take the second semester. And halfway through that semester, I was dreading classes because it was all about abnormal psychology, you know, the psychology of dysfunctional people and all that kind of stuff. And it was literally making me ill. And I thought to myself, you know, psychology, when I first heard about it, that sounded like that could be really interesting, but this just turned me off entirely. Never occurred to me that there should have been an exploration of positive psychology, but unfortunately at the time, that didn't exist. There was none. Well, in the last 20 years, it has started to exist. And in fact, one of my favorites in that field is a professor named Martin Seligman, who I'm sure you know, who is very famous for, before the positive psychology movement began, he was investigating all of the absolute worst side of psychology. He wrote one of the most depressing books I've ever read called Learned Helplessness. I mean, if you ever want to be depressed, read that book. It will do it, I guarantee. Within 5 years, he had completely shifted gears and was now studying the diametric opposite of the spectrum, all of the positive psychology stuff. That, to me, shows almost better than anything else just how, if nothing else, at least the field of psychology recognizes the power of the subconscious mind, the power of deliberate programming, and how if you shift your entire emphasis, you can actually produce a positive result instead of having to settle for negative results. That's extraordinary.
Well, and so much of that is so obviously, it's looking at it the way you and I believe, it is a no-brainer. It's,
right.
Of course this works. Of course. I mean, it in positive psychology, do not like, they don't like the idea of being compared to the law of attraction.
Oh, no. That's snake oil.
Yeah, exactly. So I of course rub that in their face. I'm like, yes, it is. But the internal stuff that goes on. I have a young man that he was about to be placed in a foster care, out of a foster care home into a residential locked treatment facility because he would not quit running away.
Mm.
And that was he's a great kid. No trouble, good grades in school, but the moment he had a chance, the moment there was something emotional happening, he would go run away. And he'd be found, you know, halfway across town and have to be brought back. The family's worried to death. So they were looking for a placement for him. And they asked me to talk to him before that happened. And I started talking to him and I said, "Where are you running to?"
Good question. I bet you he never got that one before.
No, he's like, "What?" That was his, he said, "I'm not going anywhere." I said, "Well, you keep running away from something here. You're running away from your emotion. If you tell me where you want to go, I'll put you in the car and we'll go. And you won't have to walk." And he's like, "Well, I don't know where I want to go." And I go, "Well," I said, "these people love you. You're doing great. Can you change your way of shift your way of thinking to, I will never run away again until I'm running to something." And I said, "If you need to go somewhere, call me. Don't run away. Call me. I'll take you." He never ran away again.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow, that's fantastic.
And he did. And I'm not trying to sound like a genius here. I'm just trying. The shift of, he was running from stuff, and you know, his psychologist worked with him. And there's a lot of people involved here, so I'm not trying to act like I was
sure.
A genius. Just did that. But it was that question that opened the door.
Right. Yeah. Well, we don't want to minimize what you did either, because what you did was ask a question that no one else had thought to ask, because they were all trying to fix the problem.
Right. Why are you running away?
Yeah.
I'm like, where are you going?
Yeah.
And when he didn't have an answer for that, he was a very bright kid, and he didn't need to run away anymore. He was running from his emotion, and that's what would happen. It was just what he always had done. He just felt he needed to run. I said, "These people aren't holding you captive. They love you. They're providing you a beautiful home. you're welcome to stay here forever until you're grown and graduate college. And that changed his way of thinking. He thought he had to run. And that's a belief system. It's a belief system that we all – so when you ask yourself, what is my belief system? Who is Joel? What does Joel believe? What does he really believe? And am I living what I believe, or am I kidding myself? And that's why how we sell ourselves on this. We work hard on changing the belief, which eventually programs the subconscious mind, which gives us the results we want. It's not an easy task, as it sounds so easy to do, but we've had years of that negative side coming out. The positive side just doesn't feel like it's like, well, that didn't feel like that's going to work sometimes.
Yeah, it doesn't feel safe.
Right.
And what's really interesting with what you described there about that particular young boy's situation, yeah, obviously you don't want to take too much credit for it because there were a lot of people involved, but you did something very important there. You recognized what was going on subconsciously, and you recognized that there was a piece missing in that subconscious experience. You supplied the missing piece. And once you did that, you basically neutralized what the subconscious mind was guiding him to do.
Right. That's very, you know, you always use a good example of, you love to use humor and to pull you out of bad moods or depressing moods or deep, dark moods.
No, it's the best tool I know. Yeah, there's no better, I don't think.
Right, and I agree with that. And so humor gets between it. The subconscious mind doesn't know what's funny or not funny. It just picks up on, this is awesome. This feels great.
Yeah.
This is good. And so, I have a saying, it's impossible to be depressed and grateful at the same time. The two spaces can't be occupied at the same time. And the same things with laughter. At that exact moment, you're laughing. Now, I'm not saying you can't be in the middle of depression and go in and out, but if you're truly doing a belly laugh for that 30 seconds, you're not depressed.
That's right. Yeah, it's not something where you can experience both emotions at the same time. You, like you say, you can multitask it. You can experience one, then the other, and flip back and forth. But you can't experience the same emotion, the opposite emotion at the same time that you're experiencing emotion. So you can't have the positive and the negative happening at the exact same moment. And it doesn't really matter which emotional name you apply to it. Great gratitude is a great one, but it could be any positive emotion compared to any negative emotion. The simple fact is they just can't coexist, which is also good news, by the way, because it means that we have more proof. If there's too much negativity going on in your head, there's a great way to stop it. Replace it with positivity. The moment you do that, that's the moment you stop the negativity.
This piece of what we're talking about, probably in a year from now, we can revisit this topic and even know more, because that's how fast this field is advancing.
It is.
The
study of
this, it really is. The idea that the energy being placed in the you know, we live in amazing times. We have so much technology that can be used for the good, and the study of the brain. A gentleman that I admire greatly, Dr. Daniel Amen, is a leader in brain study. He scans the brains. And
yeah, you've talked about him. I mean, some of the stuff that you mentioned he's done is just mind-blowing.
He's really amazing with his ability to understand how and he very humbly will admit he still is learning. Mm. You know, this is still growing. The brain is there's no computer that can match the brain yet. We can make powerful computers and powerful memory, but the way the brain responds and reacts and is moldable to the situation. Humans are so resilient.
And I think what's going to take for that to happen, for computers to catch up to the human brain, I mean, computers can run tremendously faster than the brain. The brain is as slow as molasses compared to a computer. But the one thing that the brain can do that the computer cannot do is that the brain can be conscious. It can be part of a conscious being. And until computers achieve consciousness, they're always going to lag behind.
And that level of consciousness, and you know, we could spend an hour on the definition of consciousness. And
that's true.
of where we go with that. But that for the general term of consciousness, our subconscious mind, you know, a dog, for example, is – it it doesn't have a subconscious thought pattern the way the human brain works. Everything is stored in a dog's behavior. They do have a primitive brain and a thinking brain, but it's not the same the way ours. We have, as humans, been given access to this wonderful tool. It is built the way it's built to protect us from the emotions that we have. It's built this way to help us learn. You know, the concept that we can learn, okay, boy, I last time I touched that stove and it was red, I don't need to do that again. You know, that there's a lot of lessons we learn that we don't have to keep repeating. And they don't go away because that all this, the way this all works together and is meant to serve humans as we move forward.
That's right.
Then what do you understand? We've been given the gift of control over our subconscious mind.
Mm-hmm.
We're in control of that. But we do that not directly by controlling the subconscious mind, but by using the programming techniques that we're talking about of blocking, of not putting in these negative belief patterns or allowing them to continue. That's an amazing...
Right. There's a key point there, too. You said blocking, and I know what you meant, but often we think of blocking as putting up like a mental shield, and that's not the kind of blocking we're talking about, is it? We're talking about excluding so that it's no longer part of our awareness.
Yes. The idea that you know, I have a good friend. He has been working in his family business for a long time, and it is probably not the healthiest place for him. And he's been back and forth and almost ready to leave, and he keeps going back. And finally it came to a head, you know, a couple of weekends ago, and he left or was asked to leave. And he called me in this desperate state of, I don't know what I'm going to do. I'm going to lose my house. I'm like, are you kidding me? Are you serious with all your gifts? Well, by the time we're done with the conversation, he's not supposed to pick up my car tomorrow. I'm buying a new car, and I go, okay, go buy the new. What are you talking about? Go buy the car.
If there was any person on earth who was qualified to directly respond to his situation, it was you because you went through the exact same thing.
And so. So by the time we were done, he was all fired up, and the last little bit of time, I mean, he has multiple offers. He's thinking about different business ideas. He really is using this, and he's really going to be take it to the next level.
Wow!
This is the greatest thing that's ever happened to him. But his default way of thinking, he was programming negative patterns. If he didn't reach out, those negative patterns would have taken over. And he would have had a really difficult time.
And we all do that. We all fall into that trap of programming ourselves. And it's not like we're saying I'm going to program myself with negativity today. It's not the way it works. It's we allow ourselves to get depressed. We allow ourselves to get down because things aren't going the way we want them to. And so we keep replaying in our heads all the stuff that didn't work right. And then we see something else that happened, and we, you know, lash out at that. And then we keep replaying in our mind the thing that we lashed out at, and it just becomes this ongoing thing of focusing on all this stuff that we really don't want, but we get ourselves into this stuck mode of, I'm just going to keep going into the negative because I just feel so miserable, so I'll stay in the negative. We all do it.
Yes, but we do. And Walt, this is the freedom time. This is where we get excited about being free from that we don't have to do that anymore. As we learn, as we go on, here's an example. It's a real, real personal level example for me. We record the show various days. Usually it's Saturday. This week it happens to be a Tuesday evening we're recording, and it's the 28th of February. And that is my son TJ's birthday.
Yes.
And for those that know and listen, my son TJ was killed in an automobile accident in 2014. And one of the things that I do, because those that have lost children, I hope you haven't, but if you have, you will understand that there's a couple of days, you know, the holidays have, it impacts you more. Their birthdays and the anniversary of their death, they're just another day. I understand all that, but they do hold potential additional meanings because you think about them more. So in preparation for TJ's birthday, I have several of his pictures out, well, they're out anyway, but I have his favorite cartoon. I watched an episode of that today. Really hard for me to watch, but I laughed because he loved it so much. And I anticipated the additional emotion attached to his day and chose to celebrate his birthday and not allow any loss feelings to come in. As you know, I often say, I fill my joy with TJ. My life is filled with joy from TJ. He brought incredible joy. He made me laugh every day of my life. He had the ability to, he just thought so much differently than the average person, and had great qualities and had some absolute bizarre qualities too, which were very endearing. He had no idea how to understand sarcasm. That alone was just, That was just hilarious seeing TJ operate when a police officer pulled him over to 16, said you're speeding, and he said okay, and TJ was like, okay, is there anything else? He goes, well, no, there's nothing else really. And TJ just drives off and it's like, wait, you know? So TJ had a great thing. So I want to prepare. I'm ahead of that this morning. I woke up thankful for my son TJ, reminding myself I would not allow the natural draw to that negative that could be there, not for me, but for a lot of people, to bring. I posted proudly on Facebook about my son.
And got a huge reaction too.
Oh yeah, over 100 and something likes last time I looked. And you know, a lot of great responses. So I get a lot of good support. I prepared that. And I'm just using that personal example of, I got in front of that. I know what this day could represent if I did not get in front of that.
Yeah, because the simplest way to describe what you did and what you do on a regular basis whenever one of these key dates comes around is you don't allow yourself to get into the sad side of your son having passed on. You insist on focusing on why you love him so much. And that's what carries you through. The love is what does it. When you focus on love like that, first of all, you're doing the exact thing we talked about a few minutes ago. You're focusing on a positive instead of on a negative, and you can't do both at the same time. And second of all, I don't know exactly how love works. I can't honestly say I know that. I mean, I love love. It's wonderful. But I don't quite understand how it works. But what I do know is this. When you remember why you love, other stuff melts away.
Yes.
I don't quite get that. I mean, I get it. I get that it happens. It's just amazing to me.
Well, I think it's similar to how we use humor to sort of flip the brain. I think love is sort of the ultimate solvent, for lack of a better word.
Yeah, good word. Yeah, that's good. Yeah,
it gets in there and love forgives. Love, it doesn't, the minutia doesn't matter when love's attached. Mm-hmm. When you can own love and not be afraid of it, and you know, a lot of people have trouble actually loving because of past hurt and pain. So the drive forward, the exciting thing of us programming and learning to anticipate things and learning to how to be prepared. Today, I was determined to program my thought patterns into positive and not allow the loss of my son to dominate the day, but the joy of my son to dominate
yes.
the day. And that's what happened. It was an incredible day.
And by the way, the people who – anyone who's been out there in the listening land who listen to us on even a partly regular basis, if you've ever had a situation where you had somebody in your life who had experienced loss – and you just wish there was something you could do for them. I mean, that's the one thing we always ask. Is if there's anything I can do, just please tell me, right? Isn't that the cliche? Everybody says that.
Absolutely.
Guess what? There's something you can do. The best thing you can do for anybody who's experienced any kind of loss is to ask them to tell you what they love about it. When you do that, you give them the best gift in the world. You give them the way out.
Yes. Yes. That is when you're able to see things that way and focus on that and versus the void.
Yes.
The void is you know, and I am by no means anyone who has lost a child. I am giving you my opinion of how I chose and found an effective way to grieve. I'm not critical. Everybody has to figure it out for themselves. Mm-hmm. This is a great tool for me, and I've seen it work great for other people as well. The belief that, wow, this was a great experience. My son was an incredible experience to me. I cherish that, and that he fills my heart with joy. There's not room. It doesn't mean there's I miss him. I truly miss him and wish I could see him every day.
Sure.
But at the same time, that's not where my focus is. It's not about a lack of anything with my son. It's about an abundance of joy, and the subconscious picks up. You know, do we have an abundance or do we have a lack of? And if I have a lack of something, then I am okay. We're going to go with the lack then.
Yeah, which is always painful.
Exactly. My definition, the lack is.
That's
is
right.
The lack.
It exactly is. And by the way, I've been trying this technique of, you know, giving somebody help who's experiencing some kind of loss. It doesn't have to be loss of a child. It can be a loss of any family member. It can even be something, you know, more. Earthly, you know, they lost a boyfriend because they broke up or something like that. You know, it can be any kind of a loss. But the point is, any time that I have tried the technique of just asking them, tell me what it was that you liked about him, her, it, whatever it might be, I have yet to have a failure. Every single time they get better, like within seconds.
Yes.
It's amazing how powerful it is. You know, so I don't mention that just in passing. I mention it to say, really use it. It is an amazingly powerful way to help somebody who you really want to help.
I'm so glad you're mentioning that, because we have this ability when it comes to helping others. And when you help somebody else feel better, you feel better.
Oh, it feels great. It's like, whoa, wait, I do. What I do?
Yeah. One of the things that I have people do when they're in a deep depression, and if they're listening to me and are going to actually do what I'm asking, I have them, and this is hard to get them to do in the beginning. If you've been in deep depression, you'll understand why. Mm. But I will have them find, you know, one person who has helped them in some way, preferably not a family member. And I will have them write a nice letter, preferably if you got good handwriting with a pen. If not, type it really neat, maybe even frame it and deliver it to the person and read it if they're local, and if not, mail it to them. Mm-hmm. Thanking them for helping. Now you're like, well, what does that do? Well, first of all, when you see the other person's reaction and you see the joy of the other person, that lifts you out. That is one of the most effective tools to pull pull physically someone out of a chronic depression. Mm. That works very quickly. Mm. And it's sort of what you're saying. It's offering something. You're offering when somebody says, I have this one mom that I work with who also lost a son, and she grieves differently than I do. And every day she has this, is this the day I get to go see him again? Very, very sad.
Right.
And so what I do when she comes into session is I will ask her a bunch of questions about it. Now, did he play sports? And then I'll get her to tell me about, you know, a play he had, or what, you know, tell me about his first date. Tell me about, well, she changes dramatically when she's talking about him. And so one day she realized what I was. She said, first she said, I don't realize when I leave your office why I feel so much better. And I'm like, well, I don't know either. Let's figure it out. And after about four or five sessions of doing that, she said, well, you remind me of his good stuff. And I said, yes, keep going. I hope you keep talking.
Yeah, right.
And she said, and I can remember that without your help, can I? And I go, yes,
ooh,
you can.
Ooh, great.
And
because that's the one that, I mean, that's the qualifier, isn't it? I mean,
yes.
we can use this kind of a technique to help somebody who's suffering.
Yes.
But it only is going to work as long as either A, where they're actually reminding them of that, or B, and this is the most important part, they decide to carry on continuing the practice. Because if they stop the practice after we go away, all they got was a temporary relief, a very important relief, but it was temporary because they chose to go back to focusing on the lack again.
Absolutely. And this is such a key component, Walt, that the where your focus lies is where the programming is taking place.
Exactly.
And when you're programming yourself to say, look, what, you know, I like the statement. I read this several times on Facebook today. People, apparently this is what's going around today, said, remember when you were praying for what you have now?
Yeah.
And I, one of the things I look at as, you know, we do this, you're, I'm in Virginia, you're at your home and we're miles apart.
Yeah.
And I, you know, I'm looking around and I say, wow, you know, this, I have a lovely home. I have way too much stuff. I don't know why. I'm looking around. I don't even know where this stuff came from. I don't even know where some of the stuff is. And I have just this abundance. And so I have zero lack anywhere. I don't lack anything. So I need to remind myself. I need to be in tune with that. If I think something's wrong in my life, I need to look around and say, wow, this is just amazing what I have here. And not just physically. I don't want to get sold on just a bunch of physical stuff. But the way I feel and my good health and you know my ability to provide a safe and loving home to my foster son now, and help other kids and help other people. Wow, what in the world do I have? Why would I want to feel anything but the abundance and the complete fullness of all this stuff? And that's what you train your mind to do.
Right, that's what the goal is. Because we've already mentioned a few times how easy it is to fall into the other trap. So the goal is to learn how to consciously do this every single time that we find ourselves starting to spin away. If we can do that, if we can learn that habit, and I have to admit, I'm not there yet. I'm getting better. I'm getting a lot better at it, but I still have my times where I just forget to do it. Nevertheless, I'm making progress. I'm getting better at it. And that's the skill I'm trying to develop, the skill of always recognizing, oh, yes, there is the silver lining. Look at the silver lining. The silver lining always feels better. And it does.
Yes. Yes. And here's a piece that, and I don't remember if I shared this on open air or not, but you and I were talking last week, and I think I shared this with you. One day last week, I was driving down the road, and my car broke down. And I have a really nice car, beautiful car, very expensive car, and they're not supposed to break down.
Mm-hmm, so, yeah, especially you know, when you pay that much money for it, right?
Exactly. So I have two ways to look at this. I'm in the middle of a work day. I'm driving to a client's house. My car goes into just total failure. It has a fail safe on the computer. It would not go more than 4 miles an hour. It was trying to make me turn it off, but I was in the middle of the road, couldn't turn it off. And I was able to eke to very slowly, but I got there on time to my client's house. I could look at that like, oh, my gosh, my car just – I can't believe I'm having to go through this. That's the reason I buy a nice car. I'm not expecting that. Or I can look at it and say, I called the Porsche number. They delivered me a loaner car. They picked up my other car. I never missed my appointment. I didn't even have to miss my day. They brought it and handed it off to me while I was in my appointment.
In fact, you even made the appointment. That's probably the best news of all.
Yeah, I made the appointment and happened to break down right at, you know, a little while from a little distance to the appointment. So there was no disruption of my day on any level.
Right.
So, and the good news is it's completely under warranty.
So it doesn't even cost you any extra money.
It cost me zero. So I lost nothing. In fact, if you really want to use it, I did a lot of driving because it was in the shop for 2 days. I did a lot of driving and I used their gas and didn't mean to do this, but I got it with a full tank, left them with an empty tank. And wasn't my goal, but that's how it worked out. And I put probably, I don't know, 600 miles in the car.
Wow.
And over that time. So this was an amazing time for me.
Yeah.
If I look at it that way. And it, how many things happen in a day that we do have a choice of how to look at it? And that's the key. What are we looking at? Why do we let little things, because that negative dialogue, it can take place in the, you know, traffic's bad. Oh, I got stopped. I have this lady who, young, very nice young lady who told me, she helps me a lot with my foster son. And so she was running late today. She picked him up at Taekwondo and she was running late. And she said, I know I'm going to catch every light. And I wrote her back and said, yes, you will.
That's right. Yeah.
And so she didn't respond to that. And so she pretty much, she said, I'm sorry, I was late. She said, I did catch every light. Like I said, she goes, what did you mean? Yes, you will. And I said, you just predicted it. And she said, well, that has nothing to do with it. And I go, oh, it has everything to do with it. I said, you were in the mindset of rushing. I said, first of all, you need to slow down. There's no reason you had to be there that quick. And second, if he has to wait 5 minutes, nobody's going to be upset. Take a deep breath. I'd rather get you here safely. And don't put yourself, because once you feel rushed, the chain of the law of attraction starts picking up. Okay, here's what we're doing.
And there's a funny thing, too, about the phrase that she used. She didn't specify every red light. Right. She specified every light. If she had thought about that in terms of getting every green light, the exact same phrase would have produced the opposite result.
Right, right.
Which is really weird.
Yeah, you know, you have lights. I have lights that, you know, I go to work and I have the, I think everybody has this, but going to my office, I have this one little section of road that – You know, it's like, oh my goodness, it should be about a 50, it's a 55 mile an hour speed limit, but if we're doing 35, we're really lucky.
Mm.
And so you're, and they had this one light that I am not kidding, there has to be a malfunction. I reported it twice, but sometimes it is only green for like 18 seconds.
It's a tease.
It is. And you'll get three cars. If you're not the second or third car, you're not going to
make
it. You're
done, right, yeah.
Yeah. And so the odds of making that light are much less than you know, being stopped. I mean, being stopped is, it's just unbelievably more. So I'm going like, I want to make the light. And I laugh because some days, because I forget about that, or I sort of get in a rush mindset, and inevitably the light stops me. It's amazing how it just tunes in. So this is exciting stuff, Walt, and I want our audience to understand the subconscious mind is where all this is taking place, and you do have a direct ability to control how you program it.
And not just traffic lights.
Absolutely.
That's a small piece of the overall puzzle right there.
Yeah. It's about stuff that really matters.
And that's right.
You know, we've given some great examples of where this goes, and this is about your life and learning how to just step out there a little bit, trust this process, and really start working on that, how you're programming your brain is really, really the key here.
And of course, we still have a couple more chapters left to do in this book, but I'm looking forward to the next time that we get to talk about the deliberate choice of telling fictional positive stories to ourselves. Maybe there's going to be a way to introduce that in one of the final chapters of the book. I'm not sure. But well, that to me is one of the most...
Yes. Here's a great heads up here, Walt.
Okay.
The next chapter, I love this one, but the next one's the brain.
Oh, well, there you go.
And so... we're going to, in a sense, even though we focus on the subconscious portion of the brain, we're going to be talking about the brain, which will incorporate a lot of what you're talking about there. I'm very excited about this next chapter.
See, there's a law of attraction thing. I didn't even know that was what the next chapter was.
Well,
I fell into the alignment of it just because that's where I was focused.
And that makes sense because this is my wheelhouse. This is my meat and my bread and butter here.
Right.
This is what I love to talk about. This is where I think one day, 100 years from now, I may or may not be here. Not sure yet. Hadn't decided. But 100 years from now, I believe that this is going to see that what we're talking about now will be just very common science, very knowledge. How this works.
Oh, absolutely. In fact, I would say that if somebody were to listen to this podcast 100 years from now, they're going to say, well, yeah, what's the big news?
Right, exactly.
We're treating this like it's, oh my goodness, it's like this is the crazy, wild, woo-woo stuff. And they're going to say, yeah, so
yeah,
what?
That's like, you know, those primitive people. I mean, that man was come out of his seat. He was so excited about this.
Yeah, right.
That's just what it is. So.
Well, that's what makes it fun, though.
It is. It really is.
And that's why we're continuing to do our study of Think and Grow Rich by Napoleon Hill. And we've got a few more chapters left, so stick with us. Be sure that you subscribe to our podcast if you haven't done that already. Don't just wait to hear us on PRN or just, you know, you pick us up by accident on a Facebook page or on YouTube or even just off of our website at loatoday.net. Subscribe to us. You can subscribe there on the website, loatoday.net. You can do it at iTunes. But however you find it, make sure you subscribe so you keep to get these wonderful podcasts every week because we have a lot of fun making them for you, don't we, Joel?
We do. This is whether anybody ever listens or not, you and I get the value of sharing. And in a sense, as we've talked about, this is our own version of a mastermind meeting.
It is, and it's wonderful. Joel, it's been a pleasure as usual.
Walt, great to talk to you, my friend.
We'll see you all next time here on LOA Today. Goodbye, everybody.